Hi, everybody.
Welcome.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and joining me for this episode is Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Becky.
And Leah. Hi, Leah.
Hi, Becky.
So how's everybody's weekend been? It's a little bit cold where Leah and I are.
Cold.
But Amanda, this is like your perfect weather currently in the southern part of the U.S.?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we got a little warmer today, but we're supposed to cool back down tomorrow. So I'm good with that.
To what, though?
So like the 60s. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. That's like short weather.
Oh, I know. I know.
Honestly,
I'm completely happy with it.
I love 40s right now. Like, I could go for a day of the 40s.
I mean, really, to be honest, 38 would be a heat wave at this point.
Although, it was 25 earlier today, or maybe it was yesterday. No wind. I went outside in my sweatshirt, and I was not cold because it has been so freaking cold and windy lately. Stacy said it's 3 degrees where she is at.
Which is Colorado.
I don't like that. Yes.
Poor Heather's in the like negative 30s or something. She's freezing.
And Susie's giving me a hard time. That greeting was on track. It was, Susie, because when we went live, my YouTube volume, the volume was up on my iPad that I used to watch the chat, and you could hear the music. So I'm like real quick trying to turn it down, not paying attention that we were live. So
I do that more often than not. Like,
yeah. It's on brand for us.
It is on brand. So we're going to dive right into this episode. I'm sure there's other things in the world we should talk about, but I would prefer to ignore the world and instead deep dive into the nerddom and my love of historical romances.
I like how you said nerddom first.
Yeah, because I was a little extra, like, as I was sitting here working on this doc, like, the excitement, the exuberance in which I was like, oh my God, yes, this book or this book. And also,
honestly, Amanda and I are just kind of along for the ride tonight.
Yeah, I mean, but we're excited to talk.
Yeah.
We are.
I do feel like, as I went through this episode, and we talked about it a little bit last night at book club, mass markets. Mm-hmm. I feel like I should write poetry to how much I love mass markets. So
it's like the end of it is the end of an era.
I just want them all. Like, I was sharing over in Discord lots of mass markets that you can buy on eBay. Just trying to help some friends out.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
You're welcome. But anyway, so.
You know what I did? I just ignored those posts and just kept on scrolling.
You just stop it. So welcome to this episode of Buzzing About Romance. Today, we're traveling back in time to dive into the enchanting world of historical romance. From the sweeping ballrooms of the Regency era to the rugged landscape of the American frontier, historical romance has been captivating readers for decades. We'll share our favorite historical romances, both timeless classics from the genre's heyday and the current gems that are redefining the market. Plus, we'll unpack the state of historical romances in 2025, what trends we're seeing, how the genre is evolving, and where we think it is heading. Whether you're a seasoned historical romance reader or someone looking to discover what makes this genre so beloved, this episode promises to be a delightful journey through love stories that stand the test of time. Grab your tea and scones, or maybe a glass of wine, and let's get buzzing.
I want a scone.
I have tea. I made chocolate chip cookies, but I have tea.
I'm stoned.
And thank you to Carrie for my lovely Spill the
Tea
mug.
That's a good mug.
That's cute.
It's a good mug. Okay, so let's just dive in here with the first topic.
Do it.
The timeless appeal of historical romance.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's another anything goes genre for me, because it's like, I didn't live in that time. I don't really know what it was like. So you can tell me how you want it to be. Like,
Yeah, reality is definitely suspended a little bit more in the historical because it's like we have books that tell us the history, but we don't
Yes.
know how factually accurate the history is at the same time, which I mean, we hope that it is, but you kind of have to take all that stuff with a grain of salt on some stuff. But like, yeah, I like the fact that there's a little bit more suspension of reality.
One of the things that I always like to laugh about is if we look at modern day British royals, there's like four dukes, right? Four
I'm
dukes.
sure there's more than that. We just don't know about them because there's like different levels of dukedoms, isn't there?
No.
But the
I
ones
don't
they
know.
talk about, like,
I think
it's
there's only like.
I'm sure there are much more than four. We just don't know about them. Let's Google it.
I am. Hold on. Right now, there are 24 non-royal dukes, seven royal dukes, with a total of 31 dukes. However, if we
Well,
take
there you
into
go. There's a
account,
lot more than
there's a
four.
lot more than I thought there was. What I was going to say is if we take into account all of these authors writing in Regency romance, there are thousands of dukes.
Yeah.
And they are just waiting
Yeah,
for me and my skirts.
but if you think about it, like in contemporary, there are thousands of billionaires, which I mean, yes, there kind of are, but there's not as many billionaires in the world as there are like in the romance world.
Well, and we talked about this because the books we read in the 90s, they were millionaires because
This
nobody
is
was a
true.
billionaire yet.
Yeah.
Well, there might have been like one or two, but they were like odd. Sue's asking,
Yeah,
are
we'll
the
get to
books in
that.
the
We'll get to
okay.
that. I have
Oh,
that as one of the
okay
topics.
though.
We will cover that here in a second. So, some of the universal themes in historical romance: forbidden love, societal expectations, and family duty. The drive to have babies.
Yes.
They must produce an heir. Yep.
Everybody is having the sex and trying to get knocked up. I mean, I think that, also in this time period, like especially like Regency, Regency has taken place after the Renaissance. So we have like tons of art and museums and science is slowly starting to make its way into the mainstream. It's becoming more common for education for girls within Regency. And all these people want to do is get married and have the sex. Like,
But they don't understand how it works at the same time.
well, yeah. Yeah, let's. That's so what is it about historicals that. So Amanda said she can suspend belief on some things when it comes to historicals. But what is it about historicals that you're like, I can't. I didn't realize, I didn't understand consent. Like my favorite historical romances, consent is very dubious. It's very vague. But it doesn't bother me. Yeah, I mean, we were kind of talking about this a little bit before. Like the consent, the dubious consent doesn't really bother me. I think in some of the older romances, especially like the early 90s, it was the language they used when talking about women and like it being property and kind of like an ownership situation. Like, not that I have necessarily a problem with that whole like my wife, my this, my that, but it was more of like an object kind of
The
situation in some
verbiage
of the earlier
used.
ones. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a piece of property. The ownership, the value is in the.
Well, it
Yeah.
almost gives it like slave mentality, like
Yes.
she's there to serve him and only him, and yeah, it gives it kind of an ick
Okay. So,
in the way that it's worded
as you speak
sometimes.
of slave mentality, though, one of my favorite series that is so bonkers, like so bonkers, but. If you loved the Last Kingdom or
Oh, I do like
Viking,
that. Oh, yeah.
if you had a thing for Uhtred, Joanna Lindsay
I
had
did
a
like the Uhtred.
series that was Vikings. And book one, the mom is kidnapped from her Celtic seaside village and enslaved by the hero, and she wears chains. And that would be called The Fires of Winter is book one. It's from the 80s.
But it depends on how it plays out, whether or not it's bad or not.
Yes.
Well,
So,
which I
not a
know
lot of
saying it like
consent in this
that does
book.
not make sense, but Amanda knows what I mean.
I know what you mean because I think like I reread, so like one of my first romances that I ever remember reading was The Sherbet Bride by Catherine Coulter. So that's like the first book in her Bride series. It was like published like I think 1992. So he's a duke and he's supposed to marry this woman that he saw 3 years ago before he went off to war. He has to go on a spy mission and he sends his cousin to wed her by proxy. So anyway, his cousin ends up marrying the woman that he wants and he gets married to the younger sister. And so this is in England and he is very, they're very well to do. It is whatever, but the way he speaks to her in rereading this book is very much like, you're a child. I'm going to tell you what to do. You're going to do exactly what I say. And it's very rude. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, man, what was I thinking? But it's still nostalgic to me. I still enjoy the story overall, but some of the language, I was like, oh, wow.
Well, and I
I mean, a
was
lot has changed in 30 years.
well, and I was thinking of a lot of the historicals, and we talked about a little bit last night at book club, the gender bending in the historicals. How many girls are dressed as boys and the hero is falling in love or sexually enticed by the what they think is a boy on the ship or their squire, like The Conquest by Jude Devereaux, she poses as his squire to his knight and supposed to be there in training, but he's like attracted to her. And it's like, huh, okay. One of the things that historical romance can cover, classic romances such as Pride and Prejudice, Wuthering Heights, all the way to like The Duke and I by Julia Quinn, or even An Extraordinary Union by Alyssa Cole, which is a Civil War era romance. So, saying historical romance, it isn't just bodice rippers. It isn't just the American West. It can cover, Stephanie Lawrence wrote about, the UK occupation of India and the British Empire and the viceroy system and stuff like that. So that's something to consider too as we go through this. We might not mention your favorite book because we're trying to cover quite the variety.
Broad range.
The most popular historical romance, the one that has sold the most copies, is The Lord of Scoundrels by Loretta Chase.
That tracks.
And the top three highest rated and reviewed historical romances are Indigo by Beverly Jenkins, The Luckiest Lady in London by Sherry Thomas, and A Week to Be Wicked by Tessa Dare. So let's talk about the iconic eras and settings of historical romance. So, which time period and setting are the most popular in historical romance? I think it's Regency, Scottish Highlands. What else do we see? America
American
West.
West, yeah.
Because it's like that cowboy covered wagon type
You
of
know, it
thing.
was really shocking though, as I was going and looking, because we've started to see this popularity of some authors moving back to the Victorian age. So moving forward from Regency, going into the Victorian age, we're seeing authors start to do the Gilded Age. And, there's the TV series on HBO, The Gilded Age, which if you're part of our Patreon, watch that. I think we're going to do a group watch of season one, episode one of The Gilded Age to kind of get back in the mood for that because I love that series. Have you guys watched it?
No, I
I
haven't.
haven't watched that one, but.
Oh, it's so good. So good. Actually, I think it's a better, well thought out series and story than Bridgerton.
I love the Bridgerton books. I do not love the Bridgerton TV show.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of our favorite books that would hit in some of these areas. So we're going to cover Scottish Highlands, America West, the Regency, the Gilded Age. And I made lists. Look, I made a list. I
Of
broke
course
it
you did.
down.
Yeah, we're going to be going off Becky's list.
Yeah, well, because here's the thing. I have actually not read a ton of historical. I mean, I did read some for
Are you
this.
making fun of my
So,
list? No,
no, I'm not
no.
making fun of your lists.
We're
I
talking
like
about the
your
fact that,
list.
Leah and I do not have that many
I think I have
recommendations
maybe
outside of
seven
your list.
books,
I'm here.
possibly seven books.
I don't even have that many.
Well, and one of them is like a full series, so
Yeah,
it
and I think we
doesn't.
have the same one. Yeah.
So let's just talk
I'm
about
sure
that
we
first
don't,
one
because mine
that's.
is American
We're
West,
going to Scottish
so.
Highlands first. Let's talk about the one that we think everybody needs to read that is really well thought out. It's really stinking sexy. And that is the Maya Banks, the two different series that she has that take place
Yes.
in the Highlands. So we're talking about the McCabe trilogy and the Montgomery Armst and Armstrongs.
The McCabe
I only read the
trilogy is.
McCabes, but yeah.
It's real good. Well, it's Maya Banks, so like I know the other ones are going to be good too. I only did McCabe also
The
because
Montgomery Armstrongs are
time.
my favorite because the heroine in that first book, she pretends to be mute, because she's gets injured and is hard of hearing and just stops talking because she doesn't know how loud she is.
I mean, that's fair.
And so they all think
Interesting.
that she's dumb when she gets married off. They think the king has ordered her to be married, and everyone's like, she's not right in the head. And he thinks that she, doesn't have all her wits about her, and she's trying to seduce him. So the first like 30% of the book, you're kind of like, I think she has her wits, dude. Wake up.
Well, and that's one thing I appreciate about Maya Banks, like in general, is she does not write too stupid to live heroines. Like they
Rarely.
might have moments of dumb because, I mean, she's female, so, but yeah,
That is
I
something we
appreciate
do
the
get.
strength.
We do kind of get a lot in historical
And
romances, but not in the Scottish Highland ones. There's very few that I think, oh, that heroine, she wouldn't have lasted 2 minutes in a Scottish winter.
I think that's one of the reasons that like I don't always like historical is because I have a really hard time with that kind of heroine.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Another Highland series that I love is The Highland Guard by Monica McCarthy. McCarthy? McCarthy. Especially for those of you that love like security forces and the over-the-top protectors, the military-styled contemporary romances, read The Highland Guard. They all have a very, like, there's the chief, and then it's all their positions within the guard.
Okay.
The swordsman's, the marksman, whatever their ranking is and how they work within their group. But these are like, for Scottish Highland time, elite killing machines, but
They're
with
so
sexy
crazy.
times and kilts and no
Yeah.
running water.
Stacy said Donna Fletcher is her go-to for the Highlanders.
Yeah. The Bride by Julie Garwood.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Julie
It's
Garwood.
Julie
It's going to be
Garwood.
good.
When a Scot Ties the Knot by Tessa Dare. That's part of her Castles Ever After series. It's another one of my favorites. A Gentle
Think I've
Feuding.
actually read that one
A
because
Gentle
I've read a couple
Feuding by
Tessa
Joanna
Dare.
Lindsay.
I read
Also,
that one a long time ago.
so good. It's so good. And The Kingdom of Dreams, which is Westmoreland book number one by Judith McNutt, which is really interesting because she wrote Whitney, My Love first, and A Kingdom of Dreams is actually about his like great 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 grandparents and the tradition of the family and stuff. It's really, I love it.
That's
I've
interesting.
not read Donna Fletcher, but I don't think she must be as well known. Wonder how long she's been publishing. Okay, do you guys have any other Highlanders that you love that you feel like we need to talk about?
No, the
No.
only ones I got to were the McCabes.
Okay. Well, next we'll go to
There's
the
probably gonna be a
American
lot of
West.
no from us
Yeah,
tonight.
let's go to the American West and some of the older American West romances. There are problems.
Oh,
We
yes.
recognize that there are problems. There's problems in the treatment of the indigenous people, the way they're portrayed in these books, the colonization of land, the stealing of land, the ones that take place in Texas that are dealing in that time period of, the Mexican American Revolution and all of that. Like, we get it. Not perfect. But for the sake of this moment in this episode, we're going to pretend that they're still okay. This is where we suspend belief and don't believe that we're terrible colonizers.
Man.
Okay, so the Lorraine Heath, the Texas trilogy, that is apparently Gloria's like
Oh, she
go-to.
was raving about that last
Yeah.
night. Raving, like.
For the Roses by Julie Garwood. This was actually made into a TV, like Hallmark TV movie.
I watched it.
It's really terrible.
I've seen that too.
Jennifer
Yeah.
Garner is in it.
Yeah, it's bad.
They
Was it her?
changed.
Oh my
It is.
gosh. It's like cheesy, like after
Yeah.
school special type
They
movie.
changed the story some.
Yeah.
Well,
But one
of
of the
course they did.
things that that book I really loved was the found family aspect. Like, because, she's found in the alley by this band of brothers who are orphans living on the street in New York, and they head east. And there's one of the brothers that is a runaway slave. And, you get his story of his mother and what she sacrificed to get him there. And then eventually they name her Rose after his mother. And eventually Mama Rose shows up in the book. But the way that Julie Garwood did that is you have For the Roses, and then she wrote three novellas for three of the four brothers, and then another full-length novel come spring that closes out the series. And they live like in Montana. So doesn't everybody want to live in Montana?
Right.
Another one is The
Man.
Hell's Eight by Sarah McCarty. If you want over the top, kinky, sexy cowboys in the American West, try that one. But again, the language is a little dated. Prince Charming by Julie Garwood is another one of my favorites. This one is really interesting because it's the Western movement. It's moving west, but train, like trains have already started to be laid and stuff like that. And they go west and he is grouchy. Like, I think he might be the first grumpy hero that I really fell in love with forever and ever. So that's another one I really like. Twin of Fire, Twin of Ice by Jude Devereaux. She deals with the mining and the aspect of small town living in the mining in the Western states. The really interesting one about that is those two books, actually, the storylines run concurrent. And so one book is in one twin's point of view, and the other book is in the other twin's point of view. They each have different love stories, but they've actually swapped. Like,
Ooh, twin
it's a
swaps.
twin swap.
I do like when books do that, but it has to work. Like, it's really hard for it to make sense and to work well.
Has to be a really strong writer that gets everything like,
And a good editor
yeah.
also.
Let's see here. Elizabeth Lowell, she wrote a lot in the Sierra Nevada mountain ranges with wild horses, lots of wild horses. And she deals a lot with writing, even some of Like one of the heroines is she was native raised, like she's half native, and she's sent to England to
Oh, I think I read that. I'm pretty sure I read that series.
See, this is the thing. Like, these are those books that, like, as we're talking about those, I'm like, yeah, I totally read that a long time ago,
Yeah, and she
but
has
I
a way
read
with
it.
horses, and
She was like the horse whisperer, like, yeah.
And then we have, so then we go into Regency. That's the next popular time period is Regency. And of course, you'll find everything from Lisa Kleypas to Tessa Dare to Sophie Jordan to Judith McNaught to Judith McNaught to Stephanie Lawrence to Mary Jo Putney. Can we talk a little bit about Stephanie Lawrence and The Devil's Bride? That
Sure.
book, that was like, I read that first book. Scandalous. Like, there was more sex in that book. You know, we give books a hard time that have like multiple chapters of sex scenes. That book did it, and I was not sad. I just recently did a reread, and I'm like, oh, this book is spicy.
Yeah.
And this lady just keeps writing. Like, 'cause she has the Sinister Brides. You guys, actually, those that like romantic suspense, she has her Bastillion Club that is like a secret society kind
Oh, yeah, I
of.
love the secret societies. I mean, all of
I do
my
too.
recommendations are authors that eventually switch to romantic suspense. Like, those are my go-to, authors, like started out in like historicals and then moved to romantic suspense. Like, everything that I have is like it echoes either paranormal or romantic suspense.
Next, we are going the next popular section of historical is the Gilded Age. And those you get like Joanna Shoup has her Knickerbocker Club, her Fifth Avenue Rebels, Duchess by Design by Maya Rodil. So we see a lot coming of the Gilded Age. I was actually really shocked nobody's writing in the 1920s.
Yeah, but we were talking about that, how like the 1920s themselves were not a good time. And so it's like people don't want to write about depressing eras.
The More Than This by Crystal Marquez. This is 1910 Chicago. It is about the rising of wealth amongst black people. And she's writing historical romances. It's the Davenports, and talks about their wealth in Chicago and how they functioned within that time period in the 1910. It's very, very good. I read the first one. More Than This is the second one. So there's that. Another thing that we saw in a lot of historical romances that I don't think that we see now is time travel. And of course, there's Outlander, right? Like, Outlander is time travel, but there were so many others that had time travel.
Kelly Armstrong is still doing that, and I'm forgetting the name of her series, but it's that time. It's like the Timekeepers something or other. I'll have to like look it up, but she's
Well,
still doing that.
and I came across a series the other day. I cannot think of who the author is. Like, I have like contemporaries by her, but it's this whole like the heroes live in like Civil War times and like the heroines like wake up like in that time. It sounded really fascinating. It's like this whole Civil War bride series and like how they deal with like the travel and all those things.
Well,
But
and Melanie
return time.
Harlow's Speakeasy, it's actually out already. I think she's doing a relaunch of it. And Jude Devereaux did have two that were time travel. And then, of course, there's Outlander. Something interesting about Jude Devereaux, because we all know, like, I have a problem. She actually wrote pretty much every time period. She has Medieval with her Black Lion series. the Raider, which is the start of the Montgomery Taggart family in the U.S., is Revolutionary War. Mountain Laurel is the Louisiana Purchase and moving west. Twin of Ice, Twin of Fire is mining in the western countries or states. The Awakening in 1910, which is about union organizing farm workers, and it talks about the women's right to vote. The Invitation takes place in the 1940s, and she is a daredevil pilot. The Princess, post-World War II, and then you have her Edelin series, which covers from 1766 to current day. And that's like Days of Gold, Promise, and then like Lavender Morning. And actually, it's all connected to the same family in that series.
Interesting. Oh, and I looked up the author. It's Piper Davenport.
Is it Piper Davenport?
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Civil War Brides. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the one I was talking about was Kelly Armstrong, and she does, it's the Rip Through Time series. And so in the first book, they go back and forth between 1869 and 2019. So it's kind of like a mystery, and she's still writing those. So I haven't read those yet, but I've read some other books by her. It's definitely on my list.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Time travel was kind of a thing, and now it's not a thing.
Yeah, I feel like there was a good, like...
Yeah.
And there was like a chunk in like the late 90s, early 2000s, where there was like a whole bunch of like time travel books that had come out.
And you can even see kind of society's movements within the historical romances. If you look at like Joanna Lindsay in the 80s wrote this book called Secret Fire. It deals all with aphrodisiacs, which was a really big thing in the late 70s, early 80s. Yeah. You know, women moving and starts a business, you know, so you could see that there was a movement for women in business in the late 80s. And that's when you start in early 90s. And that's when you start to see like Eloisa James and bringing out like Blue Stockings and Wallflowers, like pushing the agenda. And that's something that we kind of have talked about a little bit. You know, historical isn't doing really well on the market right now. Because we're not getting these grand stories of opulence so much anymore. We're getting agendas in the romances. You feel like, you know, you want to talk about taking down the patriarchy and or women in science. And I can get behind Elizabeth Everett. She has like a women in science. I like those.
One second.
But I don't feel like she's preaching to me in those books. But then I read some of Sarah McLean's and I feel like she's really pushing her own agenda of,
you know.
Feminist
agenda.
The what?
The feminist agenda.
The feminist agenda. And, you know, am I a great feminist? No, I'm absolutely not. But there are certain things I want in my historicals. There's certain things I want in my romance. I know books are political. I know that. But it just don't...
But
it can be subtly without pushing it down my throat.
And I think the problem with the historicals is they're like... In that time, there was a vast division of power between men and women. And it's like, you can't, it doesn't read right when they mess with that. It's not to say that there were not strong women who were capable of getting things done, but there was a huge difference in the class of men and women.
Yeah.
And so like when you're having that feminist like forward stuff, it doesn't feel genuine to the time, and so it makes it a little fishy in the story.
So, you know, if we look at where historical started and those that were reading historicals, I mean, they were the bodice rippers. They were nuanced. They were very sexy. They were women's pleasure forward. And then, but the current... The current market is agenda driven. And so I wonder if that's part of what has fallen off. And I read some current historicals in prep for this, and some really hit for me. Like, I really liked Bethany Bennett. I, of course, Eloisa James is still writing, and I like her books. I really like Beverly Jenkins' books. But I just wonder if some of the historical is falling off because it just feels too agenda-driven.
Well, but well, I think I mean, part of it...
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go.
I was just going to say, Amanda. I think, and some of it too is like, we may be so far removed from that time with newer readers that they are just not like, it's not in their frame of reference.
Yeah.
You know, not to say that it's not partly with the agenda, but I think once you get past a certain time, and maybe with how we're consuming information, that's just not interesting to some newer readers.
Now, I do like the historicals that are showing some diversity, like Kat Sebastian. She's written a lot of queer historicals. Erica Ridley, she's written several queer historicals. Alexis Hall has written queer historicals. I like those voices. I love Beverly Jenkins' voices. Adriana Herrera, you know, she's talking about the money and the wealth in the Caribbean that happened from the sugar plantations and how people of color, you know, when they would go to the continent and the things that happened to them and sharing that voice. I enjoy those. They feel less agenda driven and more like, hey, it wasn't always all white people.
Yeah.
So,
but it's not like pushy in the way that they write their stories. And I think that's where the difference is. When you get that pushiness of like, and then it feels meh.
Yeah.
For the lack of a better term.
And so Stacey says, I feel like you almost have to go to historicals with a more fantasy mindset, suspend modern day sensibilities to a point. And what's happened is publishing is not buying historical romances right now. There are some being sold, but they are not buying it in the same pace and the same quantity that they had been previous. You know, like a company like Forever would have bought, say, one historical to every three contemporary. Now they're buying one historical to every 10 contemporaries, or not buying at all. Avon is currently not buying any historicals. They're only buying contemporary. And a lot of those authors are making the jump to romantasy. So they're just turning their dukes into dragon riders. And Amelie Howard, she just had one come out last week.
Yeah, Starlight.
Yeah, and she, I mean, I read, she has like The Beast of Brunswick or something like that, that I really that liked. Right. I liked her historicals, but they're not selling, and so she could sell a romantasy, so she wrote a romantasy.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Stacey, and like I kind of pointed that earlier. I think I said paranormal, but in the same vein as fantasy, like there has to be a suspension of reality, I think.
Yeah.
There's more acceptance for stuff that happens, and I mean, not that I have a lot of nose really in anything anymore, but like in PNR, sci-fi, like the historicals, like there's a lot more allowance for things than you wouldn't have in the contemporary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so some underrated authors that I think people should add to their TBRs that have historicals. Of course, Adriana Herrera, her Caribbean Heiress in Paris. And then I don't think she's underrated, but I think more people need to read Beverly Jenkins. Alyssa Cole, the Loyal League series that she has, I really liked that. And she's a little lesser known, and I like that we got the espionage during the Civil War from her. Piper Hughley, she wrote The Preacher's Promise and The Lawyer's Luck. These, again, are African American historical romances, and these, I believe, fade to black, and there's a little bit more faith in it. So that might not be everybody's thing. Sherry Thomas is an Asian American author who historical romances are known for their emotional depth and intelligent characters. The Luckiest Lady in London and My Beautiful Enemy are the ones from her that I like. And Sherry Thomas might not be for everyone. She gets really, her historical settings are considered lush. If you want to know about ballrooms, if you want to know about textures of fabrics, she gets a little caught up in the details, I guess I would say.
I don't mind that in a historical, though.
Yeah, I don't either, but some people it might not be their thing. And then Vanessa Riley, she writes black and mixed race characters in the Regency, a duke, the lady and a baby, and Island Queen. Which Island Queen is more historical fiction than romance. So I do, those are ones that I like there. And then, do I have any others that I needed? Okay. So, one of the questions that we have been asked a couple of times is because this is 2025. Technically, anything that is 20 years old is considered vintage. And anything older than 50 years old is considered historical. Okay.
God.
So, this is the idea of what they consider near historical books that would take place. From the 1950s to the 2000s would be considered in this, those are the decades to consider in this description, okay? Industry-wise, there is not an official name that is widely recognized for books set between post-World War II and the 2000s, but then often fall into a few subcategories based on their themes and setting. So there's mid-century romance. These would refer to stories that are set from the 40s to the 60s, often exploring societal changes post-World War II, the rise of suburban life, the space race, or the cultural shift in the 60s. So there is that to consider. That
I don't like any of that.
then
Like
there
none of
is.
that.
Okay, wait, it gets better.
Thank you for making me
Yeah,
feel
wait, it
old,
gets. I have
Becky.
more.
It gets worse.
It gets
It gets
better.
worse.
It's
I know it
better. It
does.
gets better.
I stopped reading once I hit retro.
Yeah.
Like
There
the
is.
word retro, I just stopped
I read this to my husband
because
last night, and he was
I
like,
am
what?
retro, according to this.
There is a vintage romance. This is a broader term that can encompass stories set from the 40s to the 80s, capturing a nostalgic look at fashion, culture, and historical milestones. Retro romance would highlight stories that embrace the aesthetics and culture of past decades, commonly the 70s to the 90s, often with a focus on music, fashion, and pop culture of the era. Modern historical romances. This term is increasingly used for books set in the late 20th century. Let me say that again. Late 20th century. Distinguishing them from traditional historical romances set in earlier eras. Contemporary historical romances is a niche term describing books that blend contemporary romances, writing styles with a historical setting that isn't too far removed from modern times. Again, 1950s to the 1990s. So, for anybody who's reading a book that is written like about characters that lived in the 80s, I think of Karen White. Like,
Yeah. Yeah.
she wrote, or Karen Gray.
Karen
Karen
Gray
Gray.
is the,
Well,
yeah,
that's
it's
her
the
author
same
name.
person.
Karen
Author
White is
name.
her narrator name.
Narrator name.
She wrote her books that take place in the 80s, and it focused really on fashion, music. Those would be retro romances. And then if we look at the ones that take place that kind of around like that Dawson's Creek vintage book that, you know, those books that she wrote, I would say those are contemporary historical romances. It's something that we remember that's well within our understanding of AOL dial-up. Like, we know that sound. They would be things that
Stressing sound. It was a
the
stressing
majority of
sound.
us would understand. So those would be contemporary historical romances because while they are older than what is current contemporary, they are aged more than 25 years. So that would be a contemporary historical romance. So.
Yeah. I feel like when you and I did, we did a quick shot on one of those books and we were calling it like near historical at the time. So, yeah.
Yeah, near historical is an easier way to say it, and it feels less like we're calling us old.
Yeah, right.
Stacy is asking, but they need to be written recently to be considered historical fiction versus vintage.
Yes.
It's not when, but it's not necessarily, it's when the book is set, not when the book is written,
No,
though.
it's when the book is written.
Oh, okay.
So what we're saying is if it's written currently in current contemporary times about the 1990s, that would be a contemporary historical.
Okay,
But
I
if we're
gotcha.
talking about the bodice rippers from the 80s, the 90s, or we're reading a book that was written in the 1990s that was like Paradise by Judith McNaught, that was considered a contemporary romance. At this point, we would then consider that a vintage contemporary romance because it's
I gotcha.
older than
Okay.
25 years.
Oh, so all of my Nora Roberts categories.
Yes,
Yeah, she's vintage.
those
She's
are
okay.
vintage.
All right.
Technically, all of the
She's almost mid-century,
yeah.
she's delightful.
Yeah. Anything that would have been written and published in a
Okay.
contemporary time is considered, that would be a vintage romance.
I
It's
don't
not
mind that
currently
term. In other words,
being written.
we're old.
Yeah.
I don't mind the term vintage. I mean, because that always, I always associate it with wine, so I'll take it.
I always associated with like vintage clothing stores, and they were always really cool, so
So,
I'll
like,
stick with that.
some of the older Nora Roberts, even her older stuff that she wrote in the 90s, would be considered vintage romances because they were contemporary of that time that
Oh,
we're reading
man.
currently.
Yeah.
Oh, Jen Allen says we should get some of this free love 70s historicals.
Yeah.
Could you imagine, like, if somebody went to like that era, just wrote a bunch of books, like the chaos that would ensue.
I think that you could really easily do like a why
Yes.
choose
Yeah.
Molly driven Woodstock romance.
I would read that.
So technically Jane Austen would be a vintage contemporary, yes. Because it was written and published during her contemporary time, but it's old to us. So,
Interesting.
yeah. If the book is written, so if somebody's writing Regency now, then it's a Regency historical romance.
Yeah.
But if they were living in the Regency and wrote the book during the Regency, then it would be considered a vintage contemporary.
I mean, that makes sense. It's just
It
like I
does.
hadn't, you know, it's like turning my brain around it.
Well,
Yeah.
I think about like the Judith McNaught because I loved Paradise and then she had several books, but it also made me realize that the first couple books in Julie Garwood's Buchanan family
Yeah, exactly.
are vintage contemporaries.
Most of them
Yeah.
are vintage contemporaries.
So, anyway, anything older than 25 that was written at that same time period that the book is set in, if it's considered contemporary for when it was published, it is now considered vintage contemporary.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to sit with that and think about it. But yeah, I mean, it makes total sense, but I just was not prepared for my brain to
I
go
need to
there
prep.
tonight.
Yeah, I need to wrap my head around that
Yeah.
and the oldness.
Anything that's currently written that takes place like in the 80s or 90s would be considered historical contemporary romance. This, I hope that
Yes, we
clears
do
things
not have to
up.
like it. You are correct. It may make
Yeah.
sense, but we do not have to like it.
Yep.
Anyway, anybody have any questions?
No, I think
Not
I'm done for
now.
the night.
Are you
I'm
done now?
done.
Like, we
Yeah,
can
I'm
just
done.
be
Broke us.
done.
I'm just done.
I'm sorry that I broke you.
Oh my goodness.
I didn't know that was.
I don't even know what to say to that whole spiel.
What do you mean you don't know how to say to that whole
No,
spiel?
it's completely interesting, but yeah, I mean, it's like I had to like because when I read it before we did the episode, and I was not processing that, you know, that things that we read
I did
contemporary were
not
like
read it.
vintage.
Yes, I did not read it in the way that it was
Exactly.
worded out loud.
So we're just our brains are just like trying to catch up, Becky. That's all.
Okay. Well, I'm
Let our
glad
early 40s brains calm down a little.
I'm here for you to support. Like, I feel like every time we do one of these deep dives into something, I break your hearts a little bit.
That's okay.
Are we sure?
I mean,
Yeah. Like, okay.
hey, Becky, wild hearts can't be broken.
Wild hearts can't be broken. Did I tell you that in order to annoy like my child and Shauna, I am complimenting people with vague corporate dad speak? I'm
No,
so
you
happy you
did
don't do
not.
that to us.
Consider that a gold star moment, well earned.
She can't even say it.
She can't, not to us.
You're not just meeting expectations, you're exceeding them.
Oh,
Did
wow.
you Google
I made a
dad
list.
jokes?
I made a list.
You totally looked it up.
You've
Corporate
really
dad
moved the
jokes.
needle on that project. Well done.
Oh.
This is a prime example of thinking outside the box and delivering results. I think I'm going to start sending you these, Leah.
Oh no.
Why?
She's
Why
just going to
would you
send it to you.
You do realize that if you send it to me, I will send you things back, right?
This is a textbook example of leadership in action. Fantastic effort.
Oh no.
Best friends. Leah's like,
I
I'm
don't have
so.
to answer your phone calls, you know.
Leah's like, I'm so done with you. You know, it's
Just
fine.
for
My face
tonight.
hurts now.
She's laughing too much, like, because I'm hilarious.
Mean, you keep telling
Hilarious.
yourself that, and somebody else might start to believe it.
You know,
You're welcome.
sometimes
You give me corporate dad speak, I give you the sass.
you're a little sassy. Anyway, okay. Guess what time it is, Leah?
It's that time
Amanda, what
for
time is
book
it? Book of
of
the
the
week.
week. So I feel like we haven't done that like recently. Have we forgotten?
No, I don't think we were as enthusiastic on it during the Decades episode, which was our
Yeah,
first
because
episode, and then we didn't do it during
oh, that's right.
the end
I
of the
just feel
year
like it's been a
episode.
while since I have jazz hand on the
Yeah.
podcast.
It's been a minute.
I mean, it's been a month and it's only the 19th.
Right. Like this whole year, I need to be done. New Year's Eve is tomorrow.
Yeah, it's been like a
Or maybe
year
it's
already.
tonight. Anyway, Leah, what's your book of the week?
My book of the week is Crossing the Line by Kelly Jamison.
Good
This is book
choice.
one, her new Storm Hockey series. It is brothers, best friend, roommates. He is extremely introverted and she is exceptionally extroverted, but her spirit has been dented. I just really love this story and the way that Kelly created these characters, and it just this is classic Kelly Jameson writing.
Yeah, it's so
It's
good.
so good.
10 out of 10 recommend. And it is in Kindle Unlimited, which is unusual for Kelly. She has a new publisher now, and they put to KU. So, you can, if you've been kind of on the fence about reading Kelly Jameson, give it a try. It's available in Kindle Unlimited. And then you can go back and spend all your money on the Chicago Aces or delay your Amazon packages for your $3
Your book
credit.
credits. Yeah.
Amanda, what's your book of the week?
So my book of the week is Sweet Escape by Meredith Wild and Jillian Liotta. I don't know if I'm saying her last name right. I
Leota.
apologize if I said it wrong. Liotta. Okay. So this is actually book two in the Hawthorne Vines series. It's small town in Northern California, wine country. It's set in a vineyard. I really like this one. I liked book one, but this book is like it's a step up for me. It releases on February 4th. This one is, I think it's going to be in KU as well because the first one was. So this is Memphis and Vivian. It is best friend's brother. They have like an immediate attraction to each other, and then when she realizes who he is, she backs off. They have a little bit of an antagonistic situation going on. She's only in town for a short amount of time. Like he has a lot going on with the vineyard and business and stuff, and I don't know. I really like it. So if you like stuff set in a vineyard, like I highly recommend this one.
So I didn't mention this author during our historical recs, but I did read some historicals over the course of the last couple weeks working for this episode. And one of the series that I revisited is Golden Angels,
Oh
A
yeah, this one's
Season for
good.
Treason. It's the first book in the Deception and Discipline series. And this is the first time I ever Googled figging.
Oh, what's that book?
But they're so good. And I mean, seriously, the amount of spanking in historical, like.
There's a lot of threatening for it too, like not necessarily even the act. It's like if you're not going to do this, I'm going to spank you.
Yeah, Golden, actually, they do a lot of spanking and butt
Well, I mean,
stuff.
she likes a good spanking.
And butt stuff. So, anyway, if you
Did
look at
you,
Amanda,
so
she's like.
before the Tiki Talk went away and then came back, did you see Golden Angel had put a Tiki Talk up there? And she's like, yeah, my little brother asked me what my highest selling book was. I don't remember which one it was,
Oh,
but
it's the
she's like,
first
yeah.
book in the Hugh Cow series.
Yes, that's right. She's like, I think I scarred him for life.
Yeah. I have a signed copy of that book, and I, yeah.
I am not surprised by that because you do love your Hugh
Well,
Cows.
I got to meet her
I know.
at when I went up to CalypsoCon in Michigan, and I crashed a signing just to meet her.
I
Because.
love like I like watch her TikToks a lot and like when she like create like made her Renaissance fair dress and it's like
Yeah.
she's not a one-hit wonder. She can do it all.
She can. She's amazing. And I do love her books, and they are sexy and kinky, but they do have stakes. There might not as be as much plot like in the Hugh Cow book, but
Yeah, but
in this season for Treason, they actually like the women are spies and going into the ballrooms and working, you know.
I did really like this one when I read
Yeah.
it.
It's really good. So I highly recommend it. And Golden is just like the kindest human. So, anyway, read her books. Sexy. Swag pack sponsor for January is author Rebecca Gallo. So make sure that if you're interested in getting your swag packs, the next one will go out in March. It'll have February and March's books. Our March's stuff in them. I just mailed the international people for December, January's, because you know, stamps, people have to get stamps. So those should be hitting mailboxes in the next like 10 to 12 days. Make sure you are back here Wednesday for our discussion of The Search by Nora Roberts. Currently listening to the audio. Tanya Ebby does it. It's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very good. And I forgot how much I love this book. You know, when Amanda picked this one and when she recommended it, I was like, oh, yeah, sure, I'm fine with whatever. I forgot about all the dogs.
Yeah, that was, we had narrowed it down to a short list. And I was like, we should do The Search because of the dogs.
Yeah. So I can't wait until Wednesday night to talk about Jaws. So adorable. Anyway, for a list of books we talked about this weekend, please visit our On the Shelf show notes at buzzingaboutromance.com. For a list of books, oh, yeah, hey, that's the same thing. That's the same sentence twice.
Oh, you copy and pasted. I got excited about it.
I did
twice.
I don't know. You can find a current list of books for our upcoming Wednesday episodes on our website. I thought maybe I pasted it three times. Control V. Maybe next week it'll be four.
Sometimes it doesn't taste right away, so you do it twice, not realizing it.
I mean, sometimes apparently I might do it three, four, five times.
Because it happens. It does. There's a lag. It doesn't paste right away, and then you get paste happy.
Don't forget to follow us on social media for more updates and join our community of romance enthusiasts. We are on all platforms. I am going to try to start doing YouTube shorts. YouTube shorts. Anyway,
are you going to get tea shorts? Like you're spilling the tea?
Maybe. Ooh, that's a good idea. I like that. We could do some tea shorts. Okay.
Let's not call it tea shorts.
No, I thought about it after I said it. I was like, that was a bad name. We'll call it something better.
Although, I mean, it really would work for us.
Why not? Can't it be the tea shorts?
I'm sorry.
Your vintage is showing.
Your vintage is showing.
Jeez, Jenny. Wow. Okay.
Oh.
If you loved this episode,
and on that note,
if you loved this, please leave a review. No age comments, please. On your favorite podcast platform, share it with your friends, support us so we can bring you more content every week and we can be heckled by our friends.
So, I gotta say this. So, thinking of age, so Michael informed me, since we are over 40 now, he's like, you can't get fired because if somebody would fire you without cause over 40, you can go after them for ageism. I was like, thank you for that. He's like, yeah, we're that old now. Like, I hate you so much.
And how do you feel about vintage contemporary? Yeah. Okay. Until next time, everybody.
Happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.